listening to Thought Vibrations, a yoga satsang. I'm Megan.
And I'm Lisa. Thanks for joining the conversation.
So we have... Hi.
Hi.
Still nailing that intro. Well, I was going to say I'm really excited because today we have like a special one.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm
super excited too.
Yeah. We, somebody took us up on our, one of our listeners took us up on our request about and asked us to do a podcast on something that they were interested in. So that's what we're discussing today. So I did just want to also take a moment just to say, if that's something that you're interested in, please reach out to us, send us a message, talk to me or Lisa individually, or just send us a message through our Facebook or Instagram, and we'd be happy to, I don't know, just discuss what you're interested in discussing. Where this is, we love that this is a conversation.
I'm just thrilled to have the, exactly, to continue to have a dialogue, not just about our ideas, although we have plenty of thoughts. But
yes,
to,
our podcasts
but
have gotten
really to engage
longer.
In conversation. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Yeah. I really, that was one of the things I was thinking, because we also just received some more comments about on the, you know, just via social media. And I really love the ability to continue the conversation past just what the podcast offers. So thank you guys. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Thank you.
So today's request was, would you be willing to do a podcast on trust? Trusting the practice, the process, yourself, your teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is something that you brought up in another conversation that we were having.
I did. And it was like a, what we said was if you, so to trust your teacher. And that, I think that was the first kind of big one. Trust that your teacher is guiding you along a path that is ultimately for your benefit, that trust your teacher is serving you. The second was if you don't trust your teacher, trust the practice, that this science is serving you and helping you to your highest self. And then ultimately trusting, or maybe so was it trusting your, I don't, now I don't remember, but yeah, trusting your teacher and trusting the practice. And, you know, you should trust yourself as well. I think that kind of goes along with
I think that was your first, the first comment was, if you're having trouble trusting yourself.
Right.
Then
right.
Trust
right.
Teacher. If you're having difficulty trusting the teacher,
I'm so glad you're
trust
here,
the
Lisa.
Practice. What's really interesting to me, actually, is I've been having a lot of conversations this week that I think maybe move in a way, sort of take it one step further and in another way are also all of these things wrapped up in one. So we're talking about here in the 200-hour teacher training I'm have the honor of guiding here in Cap d'Ail in France. We were talking about prana and what prana is. You know, you can, we talk about it as life force or energy, you know, an equivalent of chi for those that consider that philosophy, that you can actually break down the word into pra and na, meaning the first measurable unit of energy, which to me is also, rests on the ability to observe. Which is so much about what this practice is about.
Yeah.
Putting yourself through experiences and observing, and through that observation without quality, without judgment, getting to know one's self.
Yeah, I think that's a challenge.
It's the challenge.
It's the challenge. It's the I guess I just wanted to acknowledge that is the challenge. And I think that's, you know, we say it so simply. Oh, observe instead of, you know, react. And, you know, I do want to acknowledge that is the practice. That is when we're in class, when we're meditating, when we're chatting, when we're living our everyday lives, can we bring in this idea of observing instead of going along with it like we normally would.
Yeah. And, or getting caught up in the experience, right?
Yeah.
or trying to interpret the experience, which is often what we do. So, I think it needs to be stated, although generally it's a given, that when we start to move into participating in these practices, we move because there's a desire for change. Mm-hmm. There's some sort of inspiration to make something other than it is. We label that as moving towards self-development or enlightenment or whatever the phrase is, but we are actively participating in making change.
Right.
And that usually means we have an opinion of where we are and we're seeking what we define as better, even if we don't know what better is.
Right. And I often think about it as, you know, even going back to like, okay, you took a yoga class, you sat with a teacher and you felt something. You did a posture and you felt something that felt right to you. Maybe it just felt good. But you felt something and then wanted to explore that feeling deeper and more, which is why you've continued on this process. So I think ultimately it does come back to the trust in yourself. You started on this process because of something that you innately, you can feel. Otherwise you wouldn't be doing this.
And you trust the practice because you had that experience, or at least you're inquisitive about the practice because you had that experience in terms of doing yoga, mm-hmm. or yogic practices. That's why you're continuing on that path in the first place.
Yeah.
But at the same time, change creates discomfort, and what we know well is safety. So, you know, we are willfully choosing to go into a place that is unknown, which challenges one's ability to feel safe, and also then immediately demands trust.
Right.
But I think that I think because we're moving into this practice for quote unquote betterment, mm-hmm. right? Whether you look at it, evolution or involution, we're trying to move towards our most potent self, which we have decided is other than who we are right now. Usually that's why if you already thought you were moving in that way, then you wouldn't change anything. Mm-hmm. That when we're looking at yoga, we're looking at prana. Energy is moving, and our access to it, our awareness of it, whether you look at it as wanting to accumulate more, or whether you look at it as I already have everything I need, I just need access to it. Mm-hmm. It still comes down to prana. And if we are looking at it in terms of change or betterment in some way, right, then we start to label the practices as therapeutic or healing or, you know, whatever that word is. Mm. But for us, we usually think of like, I need to improve this or diminish this. I need more of this or less of this. It's like a very up-down sort of thing. And I think that the fundamental idea here is that prana is intelligent. Life force, the energy of the universe, is intelligent. So we don't need to be willful about whether it's more or less. Mm-hmm. We need to just activate, and here we are again, trust.
Right.
That if it is intelligent, if everything is working together in this universe, or like we said when we were talking about it before, that like everything is created out of one energy, it just moves at a different vibration, and this is what takes it from solid to liquid to gas,
mm-hmm. yeah.
to right all of the koshas. If that is true, if it's one energy and therefore we are working towards union, this one vibration, then what we don't need to worry about up or down, good or bad. right or wrong. Mm-hmm. Activation itself will bring us into balance, will bring us into fruition, will bring us into vibrancy. So the fundamental trust maybe isn't even in myself or my teacher or the practices, because all of those are only different manifestations of this one energy,
yeah,
coming back to itself in its fullness. And so if we can trust that, then the rest falls into place, because then it becomes, whether it is something we categorize as a positive or negative experience, it is moving us towards that vibrancy, that unity, that vibration.
Exactly. The moving us towards the realization that we are already perfect and complete. That's already there through our practice, through our observation, by trusting, then we begin to see it.
Purnamadaha, right?
Exactly.
That
literally
mantra
exactly
from the,
what I was thinking.
Was it?
Yes.
That mantra from the Upanishads, right? Where it's like the translation really in the full, in the, you know, that sutra, maybe that section, mm-hmm, is when having the good and complete, right? When you take the good and complete from the good and complete remains.
Yeah.
Because it's just good and complete. Like, that's the fundamental assumption.
Right. Right.
Fullness and completion.
And I think I've heard you say this before, is that, you know, a lot of times when we come up against something in our practice, it's because our mindset is very different from that. We come from a place of lack. I need to do this to be better. I need to do this to be better. And, you know, even what you were saying before, the practice bringing you towards betterment, you know, it's not so much that it's bringing you towards the fullest version of yourself, which is ultimately this realization that you are perfect and complete. Mm-hmm. So when we seek to, go into studentship, like we talked about last week, dive in trusting your teacher, trusting this path, devoting yourself to it, perhaps, you know, ultimately you are absolutely right, coming back to that energy.
Yeah. We've also been talking a lot about this week about the what makes up Kriya Yoga, right? In the sutras, it talks about Kriya Yoga as being tapas, svadhyaya, and Ishvara Pranidhana. So tapas is physical. We like to look at it as discipline is often how it's translated, but it has to do with the commitment to the practices themselves, right? So
that's a really
the
interesting
yamas and the niyamas, the instruction in terms of how we deal with the self and how we deal with the world, right? Physical practice and pranayama, which we look at as breathing techniques, but really is the yama, restraint, control, direction of prana, what we're talking about, energy, right? So that's where tapas comes in, that sort of discipline. And then svadhyaya being self-study. But Ishvara Pranidhana is often translated as surrender to God, which is when, you know, a lot of trust issues start to come up. And the notion of this definition of God. And yet again, you know, we're looking at this way of thinking in which if all energy is one, then that divine resides in you.
Right.
So surrender to the divine is surrender to the self, is trust of the self, is, you know.
Exactly.
Because
I think
you
that's
are
so beautiful.
That. Yeah. Yeah. But then there's also surrender.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So this surrender, usually we look at as it requires so much trust because it's abandon, right? Like we feel like we're sacrificing or giving up control, which is true, but we get stuck on the sacrifice part, I think.
Right, right.
And there's, it comes back again, I think I've shared this story in our discussions, but the, you know, I went into a particular experience, guided experience, to explore the idea of abandon. Mm. Because my pattern has been to always, you know, need to be in control. Or safety comes out of control. So I wanted to explore this idea of abandon. Like, what is it to not be in control? Mm-hmm. And what I learned from that experience was that even surrender is your choice. So we, you know, balk at this idea that we're in danger if we surrender. Mm. But we're only in danger if our fundamental assumption is that the energy of the universe is not seeking our highest good. And if surrender is our choice, then it's a choice we need to constantly make. You don't like make a decision and then like that's it. Like you're screwed, you're stuck in that plane. Right? Anything that we make, it's a constant choice. Any relationship we're in, we have to constantly choose to be in that relationship. Friendship, marriage, it doesn't matter.
Absolutely.
We have to constantly choose to renegotiate and stay there. Yeah. So even surrender is the same thing. If it's my choice, then I have to constantly choose surrender. Not I choose surrender and now I'm stuck in a cage. I'm in prison.
I 100% agree. And I think it's especially evident to me, in particular, I guess, that through relationships. Relationships shift and change over time. And I think, you know, of course, that gets complicated. It becomes complicated in romantic relationships. I think we have like a little bit of a block around it. So I think it's really clearer to see in friendships, actually. Like your friend.
Yeah. You know, like. Easier to see because. Didn't we say this? I feel like I said this recently, that those relationships, this, you know, Will said this to me one time and I was like, oh yeah. Mm. The relationships in which we believe we have unconditional love, right? The tightest, which usually is a romantic relationship. So the tightest relationship in which we believe are unconditional are the ones in which we have the most condition.
Yeah.
So friendship is sort of like that middle ground. In which it's like close enough that it has a lot of value, you know, not just the value of human dealing with human, but like personal investment value.
Yes, exactly.
But not so close that we can get blinded by our need or condition
right.
or sense of safety or
right.
whatever.
And I think that that's why it's so like this continual idea of abandon or surrender to evolve. With the purpose of evolving and staying in friendship and, you know, constantly negotiating these, the relationship, you know, it's things shift and treating it as a living organism as well. Things shifting and changing. And that ultimately exchange of energy, right? This exchange of prana between two individuals.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It carried me back to, as you were talking to that, that concept of the light and the dark. And that really a lot of what we're talking about is the unknown, because whether it's the shifting change in a relationship that we knew how we worked and related to each other and now we don't, or we had, you know, negotiated this relationship based on our needs at a particular time and now those needs have changed. So now how do we meet each other? Mm-hmm. Or whether we're looking at one's own self-development.
And I just to bring it back, like to the relationship with the teacher.
Yes,
that
again.
Trust, you're moving into
well,
the
that's and that, yeah, right? That one, which often feels like, surrender.
Yeah.
Well, it requires it basically. But we, in all of those, it's the unknown, really. And I think that perhaps, or how I feel right now is that perhaps the way to negotiate that is that redefinition of what the unknown means. As long as the unknown is dangerous, it will always be a struggle.
It will be a struggle to trust and surrender.
Yeah, because if the fundamental assumption is that the universe is out to get you, that the unknown is full of danger, then it requires, you know, this constant battle with fear and requiring trust and requiring external circumstances to validate and hold you. But if the unknown, if darkness can be the place in which magic lives, if the unknown is limitless potential, and if what we tend to categorize as negative situations are learning experiences, if we have a growth mindset that there is no such thing as success as failure, there's only learning, then in some ways trust is no longer needed.
I think that's
or the trust is so like fundamental that, you know, all that has to be trusted is that the energy of the universe is conspiring for our better good. You know, like, but that flip of perspective, if the unknown can be magic instead of can be potential, can be magic instead of potential for danger, then, you know, it starts to shift, carry everything with it.
I see what you're saying. I do. I think that you're...
I'm not saying it's easy, and I'm not saying it's not going to require, like, constant praktipakshabhavanam, like, constant redirection of the mind.
It is, because what you're saying really is a really large shift in perspective, but that really is...
It's a huge shift in perspective.
That is a very... That's a big way to approach it, I think. The idea of, you know, ultimately the universe is conspiring for your better good. But I think that to get there, oftentimes we have to find the right teacher first, perhaps. I don't know. Just a thought I'm having.
I do, but it's like, this is a little bit back. I think we were talking about this before, but so many things are our teachers.
Oh, totally.
Not only the positive is the teacher. I mean, now when we're talking about studentship, but even then, you know, if I'm choosing the person that I'm going to like enter into a relationship of studentship with, do I want them to be someone that I love and adore and respect and all of those things? Yes, of course. But that's not the only way we learn. In fact, most of the time, that's not the way we learn.
Yeah, no, now you're right. You said that last week, that's true.
Yeah, and so, again, if it's all pleasure and light, it's not really, there's no challenge to it. So, yes, I understand why in an ideal situation, we want to believe, or, you know, we want from our own perspective to have... You know, the vessel is ideal so that the difficulty of the learning can be cushioned by the ideal vessel. But that isn't really how it works out so much, because we're human beings. So it doesn't matter how ideal the vessel is. Human beings are not going to make, I was going to say they're not going to make perfect choices all the time. But then we're right back to what we were talking about last week in terms of who gets to define perfect.
Right.
Right. The perfect is only perfect when it meets my expectations. Maybe it is perfect because what we need is the challenge.
Yeah. Again,
but there is no learning except for challenge, and challenge is always uncomfortable. And the human that is the guide can never be quote unquote perfect because they're human. Yeah. We're all human. And so, and you know, you and I have personally have conversations about, I don't think that I'm not so concerned with whether or not an individual perfectly exemplifies what we, the teachings that we say we follow. Mm-hmm. In fact, what's more important to me is when we do run into difficulty, can I see the application of the science and the teachings in dealing with that?
Yeah.
Like, life happens. We make great choices. We make really bad choices. We make everything in between. But can I watch when I make mistakes? Do I see the reality of the practice being played out and how you then move forward from there?
Yeah.
Like, that's the, you know. So, it doesn't diminish the wound or the hurting that happens, but in the circumstance. Mm-hmm. But that's life again, you know.
It's right, exactly. It's truly, I think that's when it's the practice comes in most potently. Can we? Yes, I can sit and observe in meditation, but can I observe when I'm in conflict with someone? Can I observe when I'm in conflict with myself? Right? Like, that's, mm-hmm. I love that, you know, we talk about bringing yoga off the mat, and I think bringing, you know, yoga is itself already quite the practice, and then bringing yoga off the mat is ultimately the practice. And
oh, yeah.
And that's, that again, coming back to observation is so key, because that's what allows us to see what's happening more clearly, see the play of energy, of prana, and how it's working ultimately.
And if it doesn't change my way of being, then I need to look at a different technique.
Mm.
Right? Because ultimately, you know, what's the highest form of every technique? To drop the technique. Yoga is, we have yoga techniques, but yoga itself is a way of being.
Right.
So if that doesn't work for me, then I need to find a different way that helps me. You're right. If those techniques are not helping me in my way of being vibrant, then I need to find a different way to do that. So, yeah, totally. It's about that, taking it into living. It must affect living. Whatever we do that's about our development must affect our living.
Oh, absolutely.
If it doesn't, then it's not doing its job.
Mm-hmm.
And we should find what resonates for us that does, for sure.
Yeah.
Trust. It's an act of the will. I think that what it comes down to me in the end is that trust is an act of the will.
Would you consider trust to be part of, a part of tapas, like a part of the practices? I guess not literally.
Yeah. But I mean, it's not without discernment.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a really
just because bringing it back to what you were saying. Like, I really loved what you said about tapas, because a lot of times, like, yes, it's translated to discipline. So. But commitment to living in the practices. So to me, it's also like trust then comes as you're a choice, a commitment to doing this. And then that comes back to trust in the practice. So that's where I'm coming from with it. I think that you are, if you're committed to living in the practices, you're trusting that they are doing something.
Yeah. Plus, I also think that trust is not, and maybe this is how it relates to tapas or discipline, but trust is not a pleasant feeling.
Mm.
I don't think that trust equals feeling safe. Because, again, if you feel safe, you don't need trust.
Right.
So it must be an act of the will. It must be that I feel like I'm sort of on this precipice, right? Isn't trust like I'm in free fall and I trust you're going to catch me?
Mm-hmm.
And it, these practices kind of remind me of that Chinese proverb, I think. I don't know where that came from. Where it's like, there's a saying that says, maybe. I desperately hope not, but probably. But like, there's a saying, The bad news is there is no net. The good news is there is no ground.
Oh, I've never heard that before, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I made it up. No, I did not make it up. I have no idea where I got it from. I wrote it down sometime at some point. And I wrote underneath it, Chinese proverb. Probably because when I read it, that's what it said. But that idea, that's trust.
Yep. There is no net, but there is
not comfort. Trust is not comfort. Trust isn't like, ooh, I get to take away this edgy feeling.
Right.
That is inspiring my change in the first place.
Do you think ultimately our trust is then challenged by these practices, let's say?
I do. That's what a great question. Yes, I do think it is challenged, actually, because...
Which is, I think, why this question is coming to us. Like, can you talk about trust and how we trust the process and how we trust the teacher? Like, because it is a challenge to do so, and these, by committing to a yoga practice, that is one of the first things that I think is challenged. You're put into a state of discomfort.
Discomfort because we define the unknown as discomfort, right?
Right.
So, but because one of the first things that we learn, I think that when we feel like we are in danger, most of our compensation patterns or the techniques that we put into place in order to handle the sensations of that experience is ways of exercising control or ways of feeling better, right? Mm-hmm. What we define as better. So we've been through a trauma and we develop techniques to handle the consequences of that trauma. It's very important. Otherwise, how do we move past that?
Right.
Right? Like, it's extremely important. But at some point, like our other techniques, the techniques need to drop. So at some point, and this is what I think usually happens inside of the yogic practices, because usually we've had an experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have may or may not have figured out how to handle living after that experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but that also leads us to desire development or growth or what? You know, those sorts of things. And so we enter into yoga practices that continuous on that road to healing and development. And at some point, what it requires is the dropping of the technique that you created to feel safe.
Mm.
Always, I think. That might be one time that I would say always. And so a lot of times the reaction is... Especially depending on the level of, I think, having felt unsafe or, I don't know if I want to use the word trauma, but that's what's coming to mind.
Mm, I think that's okay.
When one has felt more threatened, the compensation patterns, that's not a bad, good word. The coping techniques, coping mechanisms are more... are sometimes stronger, or maybe our need for them feels bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get into a place of safety, right?
Mm-hmm.
And those techniques that we used to get to that place of safety were vital.
Mm-hmm.
And then now the next stage of healing is to not need them anymore.
Yeah.
And that is often where yoga comes in, I think, or at least in my experience, like taking one further forward to drop the technique. And that can feel terrifying. because that was the only thing that made me safe and healthy.
Totally.
In my mind.
Yeah.
And so dropping those things, letting that go away, can feel like going back to the original danger or trauma. And therefore, trust is so imperative to know that that's not true. And sometimes the reaction I have experienced from people has been, you know, like, you are negating all this work I did.
Yeah.
No. That was extraordinary, all of what you did to bring yourself to this point. The reason you're at this point is for that work. But now it's done its job. Not it was invalid.
Yeah. What I think...
And so,
go ahead.
Whew, no, I just think that in that moment, I understand why trust is huge.
Yeah.
Because one feels in danger again.
Yeah. And I think in kind of two things, what you were talking about reminded me of two things. And one just now is that, you know, it so often, like, changing the technique to move you in the further direction can sometimes be doing something opposite. So it feels like negating sometimes. So for instance, what it's reminding me of is a student of mine that, you know, had a practice of like controlling anxiety with very deep breathing. That's amazing. That's yoga, right? Like you've figured out how to control your breath. You're doing pranayama and it's creating a state. It's having an effect on you. And now we're going into a place where we're moving forward and perhaps advancing your current state of mind. And that involves meditation where we're not controlling the breathing. And not necessarily breathe. So how do you let go of this idea of I need to always breathe deeply, or breathing, if I'm not breathing deeply, then that's a bad thing. And it's not a bad thing. It's just different. It's a different thing and it's a different technique. But since it's the opposite of what we've been doing that has had success, then sometimes I think this opposite technique can feel like negating sometimes. And again, totally. Coming back to trust. Having trust for this, I think ultimately you're absolutely right. Having trust for this intelligent energy, and that and trust in that that's what these practices are leading you towards, and that's what the teacher is leading you towards. I guess I do kind of want to touch on just like, and you tell me if you think I'm totally off base, but like on, you know, trusting your teacher and how to, and what that's like. I don't know.
Well, I think, this actually comes back to that other comment we were talking about earlier on Facebook, beautifully, about that avidya sometimes gets in the way of studentship.
Right.
So avidya being the opposite of vidya. So avidya being knowledge or understanding. So avidya would be the opposite of that. And in the science of yoga has four branches in which ways in which that sort of makes itself known. Right. The ego, attachment, repulsion or pushing things away, and fear. But what's really interesting is that to me, avidya is why you seek studentship. Because.
Right.
I understand one's awareness. Like if you're looking for studentship, then you must have an awareness of having a lack of knowledge. And therefore you're seeking someone who knows or has had more experience than you. And that really is the choice. So,
I think that is what it is. Like finding a teacher that has walked this path, walked a path that you wish to walk. And as you said before, is currently practicing that in like this in their life, right? Like kind of how you were saying, just like in situations, like can this teacher then apply these practices? Is that what we're seeing? So somebody who's had this, who's had a practice, who lives in this way, and then that's where the trust can come from.
And you know, necessarily, if they have been walking this path, then, and you choose them to be the teacher, they must know something you haven't learned yet.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, that's your draw to them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, at that point, if there's the acknowledgement that they know something I don't know and I would like to learn it, then it makes sense that along the way, they're going to do things that you don't understand because they know something you don't know yet.
Right.
Right? So, and again, I think that trust has to many times be an act of the will. So if you know that they know something that you don't know, and then you find yourself in this position of, I don't understand why they're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Those things can help against, like, can help support you together.
Yeah.
Right?
This, I think so much of the, just what you're saying right now really kind of occurred to me. In the practice of yoga, in learning yoga, how to achieve a state of yoga, it's different than learning almost anything else. Or in a traditional learning sense where we're reading books, let's say, if you're used to learning in a way that's non-experiential, then learning in a way where you're experiencing something different first, it can then also be unsettling, I think. Or I've witnessed that.
Oh, I think that's so important. Because we tend to want to have a definition like, when Kundalini rises, it will be like this. And it doesn't work like that, right? And so a lot of times, what we as the teacher offer is the technique, not the result. Right. Because, and so there isn't anything to measure yourself against.
Yeah.
Right? No, but I will know that this is successful because this, 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 and this will happen. But it doesn't work like that.
Right. It's not, it's undefined.
Yeah. It's known and recognizable.
Yeah.
But like not, it doesn't fit in nice little neat shapes, and it doesn't always take the same path, and each person's experience isn't the same.
Yeah.
So, and we want to know ahead of time, right? This is something that we come up with against a lot.
Yeah.
Right? Is that, you know, we teach technique and then the person wants to know what the end result is, and we're like, no, do it.
Yeah.
It might, it was so funny. For a long time, I don't know, we should ask you. But for a long time, I would always joke, like, ask any of my assistants 99% of the time, what do I say when you ask me a question, right?
Do your practice.
Exactly. So it's like, not that we can't talk about it. Well, we'll talk about it in like 40 days.
Yeah.
Like we'll talk about it in a while once you've done things, so that otherwise everything is about you trying to fit your experience into what I told you it should be like.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to actually having an experience.
Yeah.
The observation becomes unclear because I'm not observing, I'm evaluating. Based on my interpretation of what I think someone else said about an experience I haven't had yet, so I'm just trying to...
You're only looking for one experience,
I can only define that experience based on experience I've had already.
Yeah.
Right? It's like when people talk about, well, how do you describe to someone who has never had sight what color is? How do you describe to someone who has never had sound what a sound is like?
Mm-hmm.
You were always only talking about things using words and definitions that relate to something that we know. And this is the unknown. So that is impossible. Mm. You have to experience it. And you're right. That's such a brilliant thing to point out. We don't normally learn like that.
Yeah, and so it's interesting, like there are other like things that are physical that we learn, but even then I almost think that because the techniques can have such a shift and change on our mental emotional state, and if that's how we're learning them to experience it first, that's where avidya can get away in the way of trust.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Fear, particularly, is what I'm thinking of, but it could be many different things.
Yeah, sometimes I think that fear is often the root of the other. Mm-hmm. I attach to things because I'm fearful. Mm-hmm. I push them away because I'm fearful. I fight for my own boundary or my current state of being, my ego, because I'm fearful.
Yeah.
But... yeah. It's fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so thankful that somebody brought this up and allowed us to go into it deeper. That was really this idea of trust.
So grateful. Yay. Yeah, it was fun to... it's complicated. It's not like easily resolvable.
Yeah. For sure. And then again, it's different for everybody too. I think that that's important to note. Is that, you know,
yeah,
it's your individual experience.
And yeah, I would love to hear other people talk about their experience or struggle or concept of trust.
Yes, please. Yeah, that would be amazing to hear from you about that. If you would be so kind as to share, I'd love to. Yeah, just continue the conversation with us. Let us know.
Mm-hmm. Please do. And again, if you have any other things you'd like us to discuss, we would love to hear that.
Absolutely.
I would like to throw out there that this time next week, when you and I record, I will be home.
Oh, my heart is so happy.
Thank you. I'm so grateful for the adventure of this summer, and I am so longing to be home.
We can't wait for you to be here. So.
Thank you.
I'm so excited. Yes, we'll have to have bulletproof coffee, and we'll like sit right next to each other on the couch, and we'll record the podcast episodes just like old times.
Bulletproof coffee and all of the ferments.
All of the ferments.
All of the ferment.
Don't worry, everybody. I'm making sure that Lisa makes us a whole bunch of mustard when she gets back. Your fermented mustard is like
fermented the best mustard thing on and the hot planet, sauce coming up.
And I'm out of it right now.
Oh no!
I know it's
bad. I will make it as soon as I get
home.
Bad,
dude.
Withdrawal.
Yeah. I also wanted to throw out one thing, and we haven't mentioned this before. So if you guys are enjoying the podcast and could leave us a review on iTunes, that helps us out, and we would greatly appreciate it.
Be very grateful.
Keep reaching out, how you're reaching out. Let us know. We love, again, this continuation of the conversation. This is how we geek out in our everyday lives. So getting to share it with all of you has been... such a joy.
Such a blessing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, wonderful. Until next time.
Until next time. Dhanyavadaha.
Dhanyavadaha.